Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Thursday, the 17th of December, the latest on breast cancer and screening guidelines this next hour of our program, and we have two guests with us. We're going to be starting with the latest studies that have come out concerning drugs for osteoporosis and whether or not they may prevent breast cancer. What about tamoxifen and other kinds of drugs? Dr. Richard Ellidge is medical director of the breast care cancer at Baylor College of Medicine and the Methodist Hospital and associate professor of medicine at Baylor College. This center has conducted studies of treatments and drugs in patients, an important part of developing new strategies for a very difficult disease. The center opened in 1999. It has run 40 different studies, 15 to 20 of which remain open to patients. Our guest says it creates new knowledge. It is the only way to improve the care of women with breast cancer. Later, we'll be speaking with Dr. Gail Cisney, director of breast imaging at the University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics, and a radiologist at the UW-Carbone Cancer Center. Our phone number for you to join this conversation is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Dr. Richard Ellidge, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's start with the study that was released just a little while ago last week, and that concerns women who are on a drug that I can't even pronounce, so help me with it, for bone loss, for osteoporosis. What do you make of that study? Can you outline it for us a little bit and tell me what your thoughts are about it?
Well, there were several studies that looked at whether these I call them bone builder drugs or bone drugs that fight bone loss, whether they are associated with altering the risk of breast cancer. And what these studies showed, I think, in sum, was that it indicated that women who took these drugs that can prevent bone loss or osteoporosis, there was at least an association between a lower risk of developing breast cancer. And I think that was surprising. It wasn't expected, and I'll have to say that the way that happens, at least to the present time, is it remains unclear. But the finding was that there was about a one-third reduction in risk of breast cancer in women who took these drugs as opposed to women who did not.
How do you make it clear?
How do I make it clear?
Yeah. How do you make it definite that taking these drugs does decrease the risk of breast cancer?
The way that you would do that is to perform studies that look at that specific result. These studies looked at women who were taking the drugs for various reasons, and the study design was not specifically to look whether the drug reduced the risk of breast cancer. They were analyzed in what we call retrospect, and this was found. So that what we need is a study in which women either take the drug or not, and we track their risk of breast cancer over time.
You, I know, at the Baylor Breast Care Center have done 40 different studies. You still have 15 to 20 open. Highlight a couple of those for me, please, Dr. Ellidge. What do you think is most promising?
Well, I think that generally at research centers across the United States, there are a number of studies that we have open that are promising for breast cancer. These drugs that inhibit repair of DNA or repair of important processes in the cells are very promising for a particular kind of breast cancer that we need more treatment modalities for. We also have studies that target or block important molecular changes that cause breast cancer cells to grow, like the HER2 protein and other types of newly found proteins. Those are important studies.
Mm-hmm. The New York Times had an interesting piece Well, just this week, actually, the 15th, looking at tamoxifen and women who are told that they may benefit from taking this particular drug for high-risk patients to prevent cancer, and that it was very difficult to get women to take that drug. I'm sure you saw that article. Do you have a comment on it?
Well, actually, I'll have to say I didn't see that specific article, but I am aware that as many women as some people had thought take tamoxifen to reduce the risk of breast cancer. We've known that, even though we have studies that clearly show that there's about it reduces the risk by about half. But the uptake in the general community has been, I guess, less than some have expected. I think that may be for a number of reasons. I'll have to say these reasons are somewhat speculative. It may be fear of side effects, such as cancer of the uterus or cancer of the womb. It may be that women are just not interested in taking medications for 5 years for this. It may be that it's perceived to be a cancer medication because that's how it was originally developed, and some physicians and patients may not want to take a cancer medication. These are some of the reasons that have at least been cited.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that doctors need to do a better job of telling women this may be effective, or do you think that their fears may be justified in some way?
I think that these drugs are only for certain subsets of women that are at higher risk for breast cancer, definitely. They're not for all women. And different people perceive risks and benefits differently. So I think that it needs to be presented on an individual basis let women not with that knowledge decide.
Dr. Ellidge, are we any closer to having an understanding of why there is so much breast cancer in this country?
I think that we do know in general why there may be an increase and breast cancer, though, again, we're a little bit short on knowing why individual women. Certainly, the risk of breast cancer, I think everyone would agree, is related to some, I'll say, Western lifestyle habits that we have, such as weight gain. It was related to some of these hormones that have been prescribed over time. But the exact etiologies, a lot of work remains to be done.
Are we doing that work?
Many people are doing studies to try and more clearly elucidate, especially on an individual level, why some women get breast cancer and some women do not.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. We're talking about breast cancer this hour of the program, the latest study that has come out that bears more attention, perhaps more research, that drugs for osteoporosis may act as a prevention for breast cancer, but more work needs to be done in that area. Our guest is Dr. Richard Ellidge, Medical Director of the Breast Care Center at Baylor College of Medicine and the Methodist Hospital, and Associate Professor of Medicine at BCM, and he has the center actually has, it's all in one place, and they do treatment studies and drug studies in patients. They have opened in 1999 and run 40 different studies, 15 to 20 of which remain open to patients. To your phone calls, 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. And we start with Alexis from Monona. Hi, Alexis.
I would love to have all hour to ask questions of this doctor. This is just a wonderful topic. I am a 5-year survivor of breast cancer, and I was diagnosed at age 40, not the first woman in my family to be so diagnosed. And I have osteoporosis in my spine now and have been my doctor and I have been talking about taking a drug called Reclast for the osteoporosis, but one of the great side effects is supposedly that it helps prevent future cases and metastatic cancer. Is this true? Do you know about this? And what about the side effects? Because I hear they're horrible.
How do you spell it? What's the name?
Reclast, R-E-C-L-A-S-T.
Okay, yes.
Well, I can make some general comments. Obviously, again, every individual is different, but this drug is part of the class of drugs that doctors call bisphosphonates. I call, with patients, bone builders or prevent bone loss, and that was their original intent. Over time, evidence is accumulating that these drugs somehow, and we don't understand quite how, appear to reduce the risk of the breast cancer coming back in women who have had breast cancer. There are a number of trials that are ongoing. In fact, a couple of large trials were waiting for definitive results and probably will be out in the next year or two to see whether this is indeed true. But there have been some trials to date that indicate that it possibly may be. And then in addition, we have these studies that came out in the last week or two that show that they may reduce the risk of developing breast cancer in women who have not had breast cancer. So evidence is accumulating for that. In terms of side effects, I will say that these drugs, overall, women seem to do fairly well on them. There is one rare side effect that people worry about a lot because it's serious. It affects the bone of the jaw, but it occurs in less than 1% of women.
I had a lot of bone pain when I took Taxol, the drug. Would I be more susceptible for this type of bone pain with this Reclast type of drug?
I don't think so. Some women have reported that there are some transient aches and pains that last a day or two that are usually mild.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's kind of weird that it would center in the jaw, isn't it? What's that?
Again, I don't know if the mechanism or the reason why is well understood. It is a fairly peculiar side effect.
Yes.
It is, it affects portions of the bone of the jaw where the bone joins the teeth, and the small portions of the jaw can die and can't have to be surgically removed. But again, it's a very uncommon side effect.
And most drugs do have some kind of possibly serious side effect, right? That could affect a number of people.
All drugs have side effects.
Right. Thanks, Alexis, for your call. We go next to Matthew from Waukesha. Hi, Matthew.
Hi. I just have kind of a comment/question. You talked earlier a little bit about the occurrence of breast cancer being higher in the U.S. Is that true?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
When I say higher than areas in Asia or Africa and less developed countries.
Okay. Would it possibly be then, I was going over this in my head, that our quality of health care in treating breast cancer then is better, so our mortality rate is just less than that in other countries, whereas in those undeveloped countries, they aren't as able to treat breast cancer and therefore have a higher mortality rate, and therefore the gene, as far as genetics, is not passed down. Whereas in the U.S., if we have so many people surviving breast cancer, it's not talked about that often, but I've had three women in my family that are breast cancer survivors. Now, when they have children and their children are children, they're passing down the gene, whereas, say, a situation like that in another country with less developed health care, that wouldn't happen. Could that also be a possibility?
Well, that's an interesting idea, the one that I haven't ever heard before, but it has, if I understand it, you're saying that in underdeveloped countries, the mortality is higher, and so genes that predispose to breast cancer aren't passed down. Mm-hmm. I would say it's an interesting theory, but evolution takes, which is basically what we're talking about here, evolution takes generally many, many, many generations, probably thousands of years, and this is an observation that has occurred over, you know, several decades. Mm-hmm. So probably not, but it's an intriguing idea.
Thank you, Matthew, for your call. Mary from Appleton, hi. Mary, are you there? Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, hello? My name is Mary, and I am a breast cancer survivor. I had breast cancer when I was 37 years old, and it was 23 years ago. And one of the studies that I heard said that one of the reasons why they didn't feel that they should do mammographies at that early age was because some women were being treated unnecessarily for tumors that may not have in the future been dangerous or been critical or taken their lives. So I kind of fall into that category where I had a lump that I found that was then removed, and then the surgeon went back in and cleaned around that area. And then subsequent to that, I had radiation. So my question is, how does one know whether they fell into that category where they were treated for something maybe unnecessarily? And then second to that, is there something that I should be taking along the lines that you and your callers have been speaking about this morning in order to prevent a recurrence of cancer? So it's a very confusing subject. In other words, like, so if I maybe had a cancer that wasn't going to kill me, then I didn't have cancer, and I don't need to be treated for that, for any, you know, a preventative to take. So, you know, it really gets confusing, and I don't know how an average person like myself could keep up with, you know, being proactive and taking care of my own breast health.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ellidge, it is confusing.
Well, I think there are a number of questions and comments in this discussion. Screening, in my opinion, probably picks up. It does pick up some cancers that would not be a threat in a woman's lifetime. These may be more common in older women and particular types of cancers. But I'll have to say, at the present time, there's a lot of uncertainty about that. So it's difficult to say for sure. If you were 37 years old, that would make it less likely that this was, again, one of these types of cancers that was never going to cause a problem. But again, there's a lot of uncertainty. From your questions was, at this point, many years later, should you be doing anything to reduce the risk, or can anything be done to reduce the risk of the cancer returning? I would say not after 15 or 20 years, which is, I believe, the time span, at least, that you mentioned. There's nothing known that will further reduce the risk of a cancer coming back. And while breast cancers can recur many, many years later, it's actually very, very, very uncommon after about 15 years.
Hmm. So in other words, if I were to discover again that I had breast cancer, it would be a different cancer?
Yes.
It would be a different kind of breast cancer?
Exactly. If you were to develop breast cancer, the odds are that it would be a second unrelated one.
Holy cow. Wow. So, in other words, I fall into a category now where, because of the number of years that have passed, I'm no longer in danger of reoccurring cancer metastasizing from the original cancer.
That's right.
But I'm just as likely as the general population of getting breast cancer again.
Women who have already have had one breast cancer are at about a twofold risk of, in general, as a general statement, or about twofold risk higher of developing another breast cancer unrelated.
But not another kind of cancer, Or did I miss?
Breast cancer. No, not other kinds of
not
cancer.
Not other kinds
breast
of cancer.
Cancer.
Breast cancer. Okay.
Only breast cancer.
Thank you, Mary, very much for your call. We go next to Ann from Green Bay. Hello, Ann.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, my comment is I was put on Fosamax just shortly after it was released in 1995. I was on it for about 8 years with numerous side effects that Merck had never released regarding, you know, calcification in other places than bones. And the biggest thing is stomach erosion and esophageal erosion, which now they talk about problems swallowing. But I also developed breast cancer, and I had been on it for 8 years with just numerous side effects. And, you know, I just wanted to say that although studies may say that it helps as far as preventing bone loss, there's numerous studies. I received 3 spontaneous spinal fractures that it also makes bone significantly more brittle. You know, there is a bone loss is really kind of a natural part of aging. Whether or not you actually sustain a break is you know, due to balance problems and a lot of other factors. But the side effects of the drugs, I think, are not really explained to a lot of women. And like I say, I also got breast cancer, and I had been on it for 8 years, which is probably longer than most women have been on the drug.
Dr. Ellich.
Well, I think, again, almost all drugs have side effects. They need to be weighed against potential benefits. The side effects of drugs certainly vary also by individual. Some reasons that we are not clearly understood. Some women can take a drug and do fine, and other women take the exact same drug and have much more side effects.
Mm-hmm.
Also, these are not, unfortunately, magic bullets. Again, the study showed that it reduced the risk of developing breast cancer by 1/3. So certainly, it doesn't reduce the risk of breast cancer entirely. That it was a 1/3 reduction. So they don't. It's not entirely protective by any means.
When does that number become significant in terms of your reading? By a half? By 2/3? Or what?
Well, again, it's the higher it is, the better, obviously, and. These things, I think, are in the eye of the beholder. Some people would think a 1/3 reduction was significant, but obviously, ideally, we'd want a drug that reduced it nearly totally. Again, it's a bit of a value judgment or philosophical point of view.
Right. I don't know if you just had this or it was recently. You have huge conferences, don't you, of doctors from all over the world who come to your college to look at this issue, people who are doing research, who are doctors specializing in breast cancer.
There are a number of large conferences throughout the world for breast cancer. There's one, again, in San Antonio that's probably been going on the longest, 30 years, and it draws thousands and thousands of physicians. There's also others that are put on by the societies in the United States, American Oncology Society, and also in Europe. So there are several of these, and they draw thousands of physicians and researchers mm-hmm. to try and improve breast cancer knowledge and care.
Thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Richard Ellich, Medical Director of the Breast Care Center at Baylor College of Medicine and the Methodist Hospital, and an Associate Professor of Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine. We're continuing our emphasis this hour on breast cancer. We have yet to talk significantly, and I don't know if there are strong guidelines here or not, some confusion about what the recommendations are now for mammograms, when screening should be done, should it be at the age of 40, skip it till you're 50, have them every year, have them every other year, why this study came out or this recommendation, the opposition to the recommendation. So we'll continue and welcome your phone calls further here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest for the next half hour is Dr. Gail Cisney, Director of Breast Imaging at the University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics and radiologist at the UW-Carbone Cancer Center. We're continuing phone calls for Dr. Cisney, and our phone number here is 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Dr. Cisney, thank you very much for being with us.
And thank you for inviting me today.
Yeah, our pleasure. So what are the recommendations now? Women are still confused about this. Are you adhering to the recommendations from the latest council, or do you think it should be a woman's choice here?
Well, the UW at Wisconsin has decided to stay with the old recommendation for the time. So the controversy and real confusion comes with this new recommendation from the United States Preventive Services Task Force, and it's very controversial. So we've decided to remain with the old recommendation until we can look at it further.
Mm-hmm. Why did they come up with this recommendation? Can you tell me a little bit more about the makeup of the council and why they would recommend something that is quite different than what women had been adhering to?
Sure. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is made up of a number of primary care physicians and other healthcare workers, including nurses and public health people. It's been in existence for over 10 years, and it's part of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, which is actually part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So, and their goal is to really come up with guidelines for all of medicine, especially preventative services. So, and they routinely look at guidelines and revise them every 5 to 7 years. So the last time that they had a recommendation was 2002, and so we were about at the point that they wanted to relook at this issue.
Were you shocked by what they recommended?
I was surprised.
Were you?
Yeah, I was surprised, and I was really disappointed. This recommendation has of starting at age 50 and only doing screening mammography every 2 years has actually been proposed several times in the last 20 years. And every time it has been actually rescinded based on the controversy and a lot of opinion of people who work in the trenches with this disease. So it was very disappointing that they looked at the data and how they looked at the data and that they came up with this conclusion.
Mm-hmm. So have a lot of other hospitals, major research institutions doing work in the area of breast cancer come up with the same recommendation as yours, or are we all over the board with this?
Well, most of the major medical centers at this time have actually had an outcry and have asked that this recommendation be rescinded at this time. So very few people are actually going forward and thinking that this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. What about women? Do you think that they've canceled their mammographies?
You know, I've heard some rumors that people have canceled their mammography, but I think that's really not necessary. We have not seen that at University of Wisconsin. In fact, we've seen women coming in and saying, I'm going to get my mammogram.
So what are your current guidelines? What are the old guidelines that are the new guidelines that are the same guidelines?
So the previous guidelines was to begin annual screening mammography, or actually screening mammography every 1 to 2 years, beginning at age 40. It was a very simple recommendation that I think had the right message. The new recommendations say, well, if you're age 40 to 49, you should talk to your doctor and decide if this is really the right thing for you. And then from age 50 to 74, they're recommending screening mammograms every 2 years only. Their reasoning is by doing this, it actually decreases the harms that they identified with screening mammography, which includes anxiety that it induces when women have what they call a false positive exam, which means that they get called back to have additional pictures of something that isn't really cancer, or if they have an unnecessary biopsy, being that there are some benign, non-cancerous conditions that look like cancer that need to be biopsied in order for us to tell that it's not cancer. And the anxiety of this overdiagnosis that they're beginning to talk about.
Mm-hmm. What about the study, I think, also addressed that what we're looking at here, the recommendations don't help with the mortality rate from breast cancer. Is that true?
They actually do say in this study and recognize that it does, that screening mammography does decrease the mortality rate, and it decreases it somewhere around 30 to 40% overall. This has been shown over many years in many different countries over and over and over again. We see a reduction in mortality of 30%. And they recognize that in these guidelines, and they are willing to give some of that up in order to balance the benefits and harms. So they actually say, well, mortality is going to increase 15%, and we think that's okay. That's the piece that a lot of breast experts
right,
reject.
I would think. 15% and that's okay. How can anybody say that? That's okay? That's not okay.
Right. Well, they actually say that in the article. They say, we realize that this will cause an increase in mortality, which is what we're really, really worried about, of 15%. But this is what we're going to recommend anyway.
And so the trade-off, get me right on this, the trade-off is you don't have to worry as much about anxiety?
It actually is anxiety. That's
huh.
The harms that they look at is the anxiety that's induced by having false positives, unnecessary biopsies, and cancers that are what they call overdiagnosed, which are cancers which will never actually cause death in a person. So that's where I have difficulty with this, because those harms seem really small when we think about the goal of screening mammography as actually reducing death.
Right. What about the percentage, the women who have something suspicious, they go back, they're screened again, or there may be a biopsy done. Do we have percentages of how many of those women really have nothing wrong?
Yeah, we do have percentages. So about 10% of women will be called back from a screening mammogram to have additional pictures. Out of those 10%, or overall of all women, about 1% will have a biopsy done. And out of those biopsies that are done, about 40% will have breast cancer.
Mm.
So it's true that more women will be diagnosed with things that are benign than malignant, but that's the price that we're paying in order to find small cancers early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we were looking only for big cancers, we could have much higher numbers than these. But we're looking at very small things, small grains of salt, that are difficult for us to tell if they're cancer or non-cancerous.
I understand. Let me ask you what I asked Dr. Ellidge, because so many people are asking this question, Dr. Cisney, and that is, why is there so much cancer, breast cancer particularly? Why?
Well, that's a really interesting question. So the incidence of breast cancer has been increasing over the last 50 years, and we're not sure why. There's many theories that this is something that has just been evolving. There's theories that there's something in the environment that may be causing this. Of course, we're finding these genetic risk factors that are causing some of the increase in breast cancer. Another thing to think about is as women live longer, their risk of breast cancer is higher, and so we're not only seeing it in older women, but mammography has also helped us see more breast cancers than we're seeing before. Women are living longer with breast cancer, and so we're much more aware of it. In fact, most women survive breast cancer, and we know many, many, many survivors, which is a really good sign for us.
Let's go to phone calls for you, 800-486-8655. Our guest this half hour is Dr. Gail Cisney, Director of Breast Imaging at the University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics, radiologist at the UW-Carbon Cancer Center. And we go to our first caller, Julie from Madison. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead.
Excellent. Start off briefly, I was one of those biopsies that came out negative. And personal antidote, the anxiety versus knowing that if there's a cancer, It'll get caught early. I'm more than happy to go through it again if I have to.
Yeah.
Also, I have two questions. You can answer one or both. First is, when they look at the survivals and say you'd be losing 30% or 30% increased mortality, wouldn't it be higher because our treatments have improved? So, I mean, the increase in mortality is, by not detecting early, based on the treatments that were used at the time these people were diagnosed.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be higher now?
We don't know what it'll be actually at this point, but how the recommendation came about is they actually did some computer modeling, and they looked at our old numbers and put them into the model to predict how it would happen in the future. I think that our whole goal is to move forward and actually reduce the mortality rate more and more in the future. And so that's one of the things that I was disappointed with this group, because they were actually basing the recommendation on how we performed in the past. And as we improve our screening methods and as we improve our treatment, we would hope that that mortality rate would continue to go down.
Mm. And you have one more question, Julie?
Yes. I was reading in one of the biomedical magazines, I guess. I'm an engineer, about a blood test that might be coming out for proteins in a few years. Is that going to replace mammograms?
Oh, that certainly would be a delight, actually. I have not heard of a blood test that's, you know, around the corner. People have been working on things. And I think it would be terrific if we had a PSA equivalent for the breast. It doesn't quite work the same way. Breast cancer doesn't work the same way as prostate cancer or other cancers. So I'm not sure if something is right around the corner, but I think it would be terrific if we had a new tool, especially if it was a better tool. I would certainly welcome it.
Thank you, Julie, very much for your call. Marty is next from Douglas County. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning. Well, I have a question about a new tool, actually, but I also, I'm wondering, are there countries in which there are not great instances of breast cancer? What countries have the lowest rate? But can you talk about, I think it's called thermography. I believe it's a heat-sensitive measuring tool that there's no radiation.
Yeah. So there are countries that have lower rates of breast cancer, especially some of the Asian countries have a lower incidence of breast cancer, and a lot of that is just because of the genetic differences between different countries and their risk for breast cancer. So we do see some variation, but overall, when we look at the European countries and South American countries, along with North American countries, we have about the same incidence of breast cancer and the same effect of screening mammography of reducing mortality once a screening mammography program is established. You asked about thermography, and that's a really interesting technique. It does work by trying to detect heat within the breast, with the theory that breast cancers generate more heat that you can actually take a picture of. This technique has been around for many, many years, and it was actually looked at very closely by the radiologist and used in the early 80s and 90s, and we found that it was not very sensitive and that it actually did not detect breast cancers earlier than screening, than our mammography that we do today. And so the Society of Breast Imaging and the American College of Radiology do not really recognize thermography as a good technique, although it is being done.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Marty, for your call. Mike from Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning. I'm suspicious, and I'm wondering if other people are suspicious. If you follow the money, and with all the money that's going to Washington regarding health care from the insurance companies, first you hear that Washington is concerned about the how it causes worry for women and how in the long run that can cause problems having mammographies or any type of diagnostics done. Then the next thing you hear, a study that's done, that it could cause cancer because of exposure. And it just seems to me that, is this kind of working toward the goal of discouraging women from having this done, and in the long run, maybe the insurance companies using this as grounds to deny these exams to women.
I think you're absolutely onto something there. When they looked at these guidelines and restudied them, the actual study was about the cost effectiveness. So that's what they were looking at, is actually does the benefits versus the harms and the cost of this kind of study. Now, I've always thought the most easy way to cut the cost of something is to cut it in half, and which is essentially what they've done, and even a little bit more in this case. So I'm always worried of what the real underlying goal is, if it's not to really reduce mortality and save lives. So it's never been shown that actually the radiation exposure from mammography actually induces cancers. A lot of that is all hypothetical, and it comes from information that we know from the nuclear bombs at Hiroshima. So we have never really seen a breast cancer that was induced by the radiation. The radiation is really, really low dose.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not anything like they're talking about CAT scans or anything. So I'm not very concerned about actually inducing breast cancers.
Thank you, Mike, for your call. Diana from Baraboo. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling. Well, first of all, we'll just hit on the radiation. I totally believe the radiation they do in hospitals causes a lot of problems, too. But enough of that. All the chemicals in our foods, the fruits, the vegetables, everything radiated, the electromagnetic fields and the microwaves, tap water loaded with toxins and poisons, this is all contributes to the cancers. We know it does. Everybody know it does. And as far as a mammogram goes, I have had one. I'm 70 years old now. I will not have another. I'm trying to eat healthy, stay away from the bad things, and that's about all I can say.
All right. Dr. Cisney, what do you say?
Well, I say, you know, there's probably some truth in all of that, that we're concerned about everything in our environment, but we don't know a specific cause at this time for breast cancer. It could be more, you know, increased estrogen exposure, and there could be estrogens-like materials in the environment. Everybody's looking for them. And I think that we, you know, need to be concerned. It's interesting because you had one mammogram, and I understand that it probably wasn't a pleasant experience for you. I find it fascinating that when they talk about these screening programs, that really less than half of the women in this country actually are getting their screening mammograms. And a lot of the women who aren't getting their mammograms actually come from underserved, underserved populations, which may be at risk.
Well, I think she was also intimating that she was concerned about the radiation, but you have quelled those fears a little bit earlier, right?
Right. It's very, very low radiation, much less than any other exam that we have in the hospital. It's all very well regulated now. We've made a lot of improvements since 1990 to really make sure that we're on top of these things and very careful.
We're talking about breast cancer this hour of the program. What does our guest, who is Director of Breast Imaging at the University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics, have to say about what they recommend for baseline mammograms and subsequent screenings, and what they make of the Prevention Council that gave us different kinds of recommendations just a little while ago? We have two lines open if you'd like to join us, so go right ahead. 800-486-8655, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to phone calls now for Dr. Cisney, and our next caller is Sherry from Wausau. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm really interested to know if studies are being done to see if we're getting more cancer in this country due to genetic engineering of our food and the hormones and the meat. I really think studies need to be done because in other countries, Europe and Asia, they do not have genetic engineering.
Well, is anybody doing studies on that? Dr. Sisney?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with any specific studies, but I do know that people are looking at environmental things that may be hazardous and may be causing breast cancer. So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody is looking at those types of questions. I'm not familiar, though.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for the call. And if when you think about it, Dr. Sisney, if you know anybody who's doing that kind of research, I think our audience would find that interesting.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Sherry, for your call. Nancy Grafton, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if the incidence of breast cancer correlates with all the birth control pills that women have taken down through the last 20, 25 years, because I think if they'd find out that the birth control pills are a cause of breast cancer, that the drug companies would be in one heck of a mess.
Yeah.
Because it would be a big liability. And sure. I just want to know what you think about that.
Well, you know, birth control pills have really changed a lot over the last 30, 40 years. And I think that we know that the old birth control pills that were mostly high estrogen levels actually probably did cause some breast cancers. I think that the newer birth control pills that have progesterone in them, et cetera, are a little bit more balanced, and they're showing that they really don't cause breast cancer. It's really interesting, though, because of hormone replacement therapy, that we actually may be seeing a decrease in breast cancer incidence a little bit in the last 10, 15 years because hormone replacement therapies is falling out of favor and less women are really taking that. And so there could be some association between these things, and I think we need to be very careful before we decide to take any kind of medicine.
Thanks, Nancy. April from Eau Claire. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
My concern is that I'm a younger student. I'm only 20 years old. And I've seen my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother go through mammograms and see the relief in their eyes when they don't have to worry anymore. And I can't imagine being left in the dark by my insurance company in the future and them accepting the fact that perhaps 15% of us could die, that the mortality rate would go up. What do you think the future is going to be for insurance companies after this recommendation?
Well, that's what we're all concerned about, is whether insurance companies and Medicare actually look at these recommendations and decide that that's the only thing that they will reimburse for. And I think that is a real concern. I was really surprised to see that California has already decided or actually proposed that 40 to 49-year-olds will not be covered in their low-income screening mammography program as of now, and this is one of the first signs of people making changes in reimbursement based on this kind of new guideline being issued.
Right.
I didn't catch who did the study, but were the insurance companies sponsoring this study? Were they in any way behind it?
Yeah, no, the insurance companies did not sponsor this in any way. This was all sponsored by the U.S. government. So through the Department of Health and Human Services and the National Cancer Institute actually funded this committee and all the studies that re-looked at the guidelines.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, April. We have about a minute left. I think we can take one more phone call. Ronnie from Brookfield, hi.
Hi. I've had cancer, and it was detected by mammography very early on, so I'm definitely pro having the testing done regularly. But I think the other side to it is that radiologists do have a vested interest in having mammography done because that's their bread and butter. That's part of their income. So there's two sides to it, the government and the insurance agencies. They don't want to pay for it, but the radiologists do make money on it.
Dr. Sisney.
Well, I've been doing a breast imaging only for almost 20 years, so I do have a vested interest in it, but mostly it's because I'm concerned about patients and women and wanting to have early diagnosis and early treatments so that women's lives will be saved.
Otherwise, you would be doing something else.
Otherwise, I yes. could do something else,
right.
yes.
I understand that. Dr. Cisney, thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Dr. Gail Cisney, our guest this half hour of the program. I want to thank Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and John Treader for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. Also, thanks to Dr. Richard Elledge, who joined us the first half hour of the program, the medical director of the Breast Care Center at Baylor College of Medicine. Well, I guess that about takes care of today's program and this week's programs for me. We'll be with you again on Monday, 9 o'clock. It's All Things Political, so we've been on the same subjects for a few weeks. Maybe we'll look more at Copenhagen, I'm sure, next Monday. And we'll, of course, be talking about what happens with healthcare reform. Second hour of our program, the best books. I always love these shows. It's one of our traditions to look at the best books of 2009. So if you have one you want to recommend, we'd love to hear from you. Oh, you can do that on our Facebook, too, in preparation for the show. I'll write that down. We're on Facebook now. If you go to the Kathleen Dunn Show and write down what your favorite books are and then were this last year, we'll bring that up. Thanks for listening.